Welcome to the World of Woodhouse, a series of podcasts from the P.G. Woodhouse Society, UK, to commemorate the work of P.G. Woodhouse on the occasion of the 50th anniversary of his death. I'm Alexander Armstrong, and I have the huge privilege of being president of the P.G. Woodhouse Society, UK, a literary society of enthusiasts that celebrates Woodhouse and his work. And it is my delightful duty to introduce the latest guest in this series of podcasts.
Hello there, Martin Jarvis here. As a proud patron of the P.G. Woodhouse Society, I'm delighted to have been asked to choose a Woodhouse short story and chat about it. 2025 is the 50th anniversary year of the great humorist's death, so tally-ho. I first became aware of Jeeves and the Unbidden Guest in a Woodhouse collection, Carry On Jeeves, in my parents' bookcase. I was 9 and initially captivated by the cover, an illustration of what looked like a posh young man in a top hat kneeling at the feet of a calm if controlling manservant of some kind. An accurate portrayal, as I later came to recognise. Jeeves and the Unbidden Guest was actually written in 1916 and published that year in the Saturday Evening Post. It's an early classic, dwelling on the tricky connection between Bertie Wooster and his relatively new man, Jeeves. Seems to me a wonderfully psychologically real piece of work. Their behaviour, absurd as it might be, is held up to our gaze as the only possible thing that either could or would have done in these bizarre circumstances. Bertie's keen on purchasing what he sees as the latest fashionable headgear, known as the Broadway Special, much favoured by the younger set. But Jeeves is determined that his employer wears a particular hat, the White House Wonder, as worn by President Coolidge. Nevertheless, Bertie buys the Broadway Special. So the atmos is a touch strained in the New York apartment, where he and Jeeves are currently ensconced. They may be in Manhattan in order to put the Atlantic Ocean between Wooster and his tough Aunt Agatha. She's the one who eats broken bottles and conducts human sacrifices by the light of the full moon. But her tentacles have reached him by way of a visit from her friend Lady Malvern, who's here to demand a favour. The story is, of course, very funny. Woodhouse always knew where the laughs were. I was fortunate to be able to perform it in front of a packed audience a few years ago. Here's a few minutes of that recording.
Who the deuce is Lady Malvern, Jeeves?
Her ladyship did not confide in me, sir.
Is she alone?
Her ladyship is accompanied by a Lord Pershaw, sir. I fancy that his lordship would be her ladyship's son.
Ah. It was while I was dressing that I remembered. Yeah, I've placed her, Jeeves. She's a pal of my Aunt Agatha.
Indeed, sir.
Yes. A very vicious specimen. Writes books. She wrote a book on social conditions in India when she came back from the Durbar.
Yes, sir. Pardon me, sir. But not that tie.
Eh?
Not that tie with the heather mixture lounge, sir.
It was a shock to me. I thought I'd quelled the fella. Jeeves, I've seen you give this tie a nasty look before. What's the matter with
it? Too ornate, sir.
Nonsense. A cheerful pink, nothing more.
Unsuitable, sir.
Jeeves, this is the tie I wear.
Very good, sir.
I could see that the man was wounded, but I was firm. I tied the tie, got into the coat and waistcoat, and went into the sitting room. Hello, 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 I said. What? Oh. How do you do, Mr. Wooster? You have never met my son Wilmot, I think. Marty, darling, this is Mr. Wooster. Lady Morven was a hearty, overpowering sort of dashed female. Not so very tall, but making up for it by measuring about 6 feet from the OP to the prompt side. She fitted into my biggest armchair as if it had been built round her by someone who knew they were wearing armchairs tight about the hips that season. She was one of those women who kind of numb a fellow's faculties. Morty, the son, was about 23, tall and thin and meek-looking. His hair was plastered down and parted in the middle. "Awfully glad to see you," I said. "So you've popped over, eh? Making a long stay in America?" "About a month. Your aunt gave me your address and told me to be sure to call on you." Well, I was glad to hear this, for it seemed to indicate that Aunt Agatha was beginning to come round a bit. As I believe I told you before, there had been some slight unpleasantness between us, and I simply hadn't dared go back and face her. "Your aunt said that you would do anything that was in your power to be of assistance to us."
Absolutely.
"Thank you so much. I want you to put dear Motty up for a little while."
"Put him up? For my clubs?"
No. Darling Motty is essentially a home bird. Aren't you Motty, darling?"
Motty, who was sucking the knob of his stick, uncorked himself.
"Yes, mother,"
he said, and corked himself up again.
"I should not like him to belong to clubs. I mean, put him up here. Have him to live with you while I'm away."
These frightful words trickled out of her like honey.
"I am leaving New York by the midday train, as I have to pay a visit to Sing Sing Prison. I'm extremely interested in prison conditions in America. After that, I work my way gradually across to the coast, visiting the points of interest on the journey. You see, Mr. Wooster, I am in America principally on business. No doubt you read my book, India and the Indians. My publishers are anxious for me to write a companion volume on the United States. I shall not be able to spend more than a month in the country, as I have to get back for the season, but a month should be ample. I was less than a month in India. And my dear friend Sir Roger Cremorne wrote his America from Within after a stay of only 2 weeks. I should love to take dear Motty with me, but the poor boy gets so sick when he travels by train. I shall have to pick him up on my return. Oh, it will be such a relief to know that Motty is safe with you, Mr. Wooster. I know what the temptations of a great city are. Hitherto, dear Motty has lived quietly with me in the country. I know that you will look after him carefully. He is a vegetarian and a teetotaler and is devoted to reading."
She got up.
"Thank you so much, Mr. Wooster. Come, Motty. We have just time to see a few of the sights before my train goes. But I shall have to rely on you for most of my information about New York, darling. Be sure to keep your eyes open and take notes of your impressions. Goodbye, Mr. Wooster. I will send Motty back early in the afternoon."
Jeeves.
Sir?
What's to be done? That pill is coming to stay here.
Pill, sir?
That excrescence.
I beg your pardon, sir?
I looked at Jeeves sharply. Then I understood. The man was trying to get his own back about that tie.
"Lord Pershaw will be staying here from tonight, Jeeves."
"Very good, sir. Breakfast is ready, sir."
Well, unique comic writing. A completely original way of inviting us to picture Lady Morven, as well as keeping alive the sartorial discord between Wooster and Jeeves. Naturally, after Lady W has departed on her tour, Motty turns out to be a nightmare. Far from being a mild stay-at-home, he's out until all hours, invariably arriving back at the apartment drunk and exceptionally disorderly. He buys a bull terrier, Rollo, which causes more disruption. But he leaves town for a week. When he returns home, Jeeves tells him that the dog has been sold. what he took against the animal on account of being bitten by him in the calf. But he's delighted. Evidently, when you got to know Rollo better, he had a lot of good in him. Some unbeatable PGW plotting here. Jeeves mentions that Motty is now in prison after assaulting a constable. Jeeves suggests telling Lady Morven that Motty is away visiting Boston. Bertie conveys exactly this to her when she returns, but she immediately asks Bertie how he accounts for the fact that when she went yesterday to Blackwell's Island Prison to secure material for her book, she saw poor dear Wilmot there, dressed in a striped suit, seated beside a pile of stones with a hammer in his hands. Ah, she accuses Bertie of leading Motty astray. But then Jeeves materialises. If I might explain, Your Ladyship. Lady Morven tries to freeze him with a look, but you can't do that sort of thing to Jeeves. He is look-proof. He saves the day with a cracking example of his, or Woodhouse's, tactful invention. I fancy, Your Ladyship, that you may have misunderstood Mr. Worcester, he suggests. Mr. Worcester was away at the time and knew nothing of this matter till Your Ladyship informed him. Lady Morven grunts, but Jeeves merely continues, I took the liberty of telling him that his lordship had gone away for a visit. It might have been hard for Mr. Worcester to believe that his lordship had gone to prison voluntarily and from the best motives. Lady Morven can only goggle. Did you say that Lord Pershaw went to prison voluntarily? Jeeves is on a plum roll. The idea of making a personal examination into the prison system of the country from within occurred to his lordship very suddenly one night to assist in your researches. He embraced it eagerly. There was no restraining him. Eventually, staggered, Lady M apologises to Bertie. She clearly ought to have had more faith in Motty's pure, fine spirit. Woodhouse chickens superbly coming home to roost. After she's gone, Bertie humbly tells Jeeves to burn the pink tie and get him the White House Wonder hat, as worn by President Coolidge. Jeeves tactfully mentions $50, which he owes to Motty. He had wagered $50 that Motty would not punch a passing policeman, and Motty had won the bet, which, thankfully, resulted in his arrest. But he counts out 100. 50 isn't enough. Do you know, Jeeves, he says, you absolutely stand alone. And Jeeves, of course, replies, I endeavour to give satisfaction, sir. What psychology? What a brain. Well, two of them, Woodhouse and Jeeves. My favourite of PGW's many references to Jeeves' genius occurs in his later novel, Joy in the Morning, which I am happily preparing for radio drama. Crusty Lord Worplestone addresses Jeeves indebtedly. Jeeves, you must have that brain of yours pickled and presented to some national museum. When you've done with it, of course. Of course.
Bye.